I'm Justice Miller Lerman, and I will be presiding on the next case, which is State versus Stelly. The Chief Justice is recused. Counsel, are you present?
I think they're still coming in.
Good morning, Mr. Ralph. Are you able to hear us?
Yes, I can.
Thank you very much. It's my understanding that Mr. Stelly will not be present for oral argument. Mr. Stelly, or is anyone there representing Mr. Stelly present? Then my understanding is that Mr. Ralph will represent the state. And before we proceed to the merits, I will yet again introduce myself. I'm Justice Miller Lerman. I will be presiding, and in order of seniority, if the members of the court could please introduce themselves.
Good morning, William Castle.
Good morning, Stephanie Stacy.
Yeah, Unk.
Jonathan Papik.
And John Frydenberg.
Thank you very much. Mr. Ralph, you have 10 minutes. Did you have any questions of the court as to the procedure?
No.
Then you may proceed. Thank you.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Austin Ralph. I represent the state of Nebraska. This is a post-conviction appeal. District court denied Stelly's amended motion for post-conviction relief without an evidentiary hearing, and Stelly appealed. In his brief, he assigned two errors. One, that the state committed a Brady violation by failing to provide the full extraction report of EV1, which was a cell phone found linked to Mr. Stelly, found by the victim's body. And then number two, that Stelly's trial and appellate counsel were ineffective for not raising that Brady claim earlier in previous proceedings. He also alleged several instances of plain error, which he claimed occurred during the original trial proceedings. As I said in my brief, assuming that Stelly's claims were construed to relate to the district court order, we think there was the district court's order was proper. This is because the majority of Stelly's claims are procedurally barred, that being the Brady claim, plain error, and ineffective assistance of trial counsel. And then the remaining claim, the layered ineffective claim, we think was not presented to the court below. Thus, we ask this court to affirm the judgment. I'll start with that Brady claim. And you know, as I understand it, his filings were a little bit difficult for me to understand completely. But as I understand it, the basis for the claim was, hey, this extraction report of EV1, the full extraction report was not provided. And based on various, you know, alleged inconsistencies with exhibits and testimony at trial, he claims it would have been exculpatory in that it would have showed that the phone itself had not been recovered from the crime scene and that the extraction occurred before the crime itself. You know, I don't agree with that. Logically speaking, I don't think it follows from what he was citing. But in any event, I think the basis for it, the alleged inconsistencies for of the trial testimony and various exhibits at trial would have been known to him at the time of his direct appeal. And so he could have raised it on direct appeal, thus making it procedurally barred in post-conviction. The same can be said for the ineffective assistance of trial counsel claim for not raising the Brady violation, and then as well the plain error instances that he alleges occurred. Those were all trial errors that he claims occurred, and so he would have known about those as well. The only other claim that I understood him to be making in his brief was a layered ineffective claim, appellate counsel not being effective for failing to raise the ineffectiveness of trial counsel regarding the Brady claim. And that, I think if you look through his filings, he never raised that. Brady wasn't even mentioned until I think the fifth and final filing, and he certainly didn't make it as a layered claim, in my opinion. So that being the case, I don't think it forms the basis for relief here on appeal. Unless this court has questions, I think that is our, you know, sums up our position. We think the majority is procedurally barred and the remaining layered claim wasn't raised to the district court. And so we think affirmance is appropriate.
If we were to reach it, would you go through with whether there was any conflict between Officer Herford and, I mean, Herfort's and Officer Henley's testimony?
Well, I guess I don't recall the specific alleged contradiction with Herfort and Henley. Herford testified a lot about the text messages, specifically the text messages from like 1:40 a.m. to 1:50 a.m., saying that those, you know, were made by the defendant's phone. And then I don't recall exactly, but the Facebook records as well.
I believe the allegations and the that were raised by Mr. Staley involved the timing of the extractions. One officer testified they started conducting the evaluation of the phone early in the morning, and the other says that it was not until the afternoon into the evening.
I mean, that I think was at the motion to suppress hearing where, you know, they were asking, you know, generally when you received this information. And I don't think any alleged inconsistency there really changes. I mean, Herford's the one that conducted the extraction, and he said, I think he did it at 6:50 p.m. of January 11th. So I think that obviously would control, but I don't know that that bolsters his allegations about it being exculpatory or changing the time that the text message, Facebook records, or Facebook posts were made. It's just one officer remembering slightly different than the other officer. Unless this court has further questions, I would submit it and ask you to affirm.
Thank you. And I turn to the court. Are there any further questions? Nope. Mr. Ralph, then, thank you very much. You're excused.
Thank you.
And the court is adjourned. Thank you.